What's up, y'all? It's Zach with Living Corporate. Look, every single day, I wake up and I'm passionate about centering and amplifying Black and Brown folks at work, right? We go through these seasons where people act like we're so needed and precious, and then we go through these seasons where we're just treated disposably, right? We've seen that really heightened since 2020, the murder of George Floyd, and we saw all these pledges and stuff, and we saw all this language and commitments from organizations, but now we're seeing a lot of folks renege on all those commitments and pledges, right? We're seeing Black and Brown folks continue to be disparately impacted by massive layoffs in the tech industry, the industry that was promoted as the place for Black and Brown folks to get some equitable treatment and to have some sort of financial security and wealth generation. We're seeing a continual backtracking from the same people that boldly said that Black lives matter. Okay, but the good news is, for me anyway, and for Living Corporate, is we existed before diversity, equity, and inclusion was hyper in vogue, and we're going to continue to exist as diversity becomes a disgusting cuss word, right? The other good news I'm going to say is that we don't really subscribe to all of that hyper white liberal jargon. That is really what diversity, equity, and inclusion is. It's a bunch of different gobbledygook words that don't really mean much, that really aren't defined well. I'm excited about the fact that we have conversations with executives, activists, elected officials, entrepreneurs, influencers, artists, and every single week, dare I say every single day, we're publishing content that challenges systems, structures, and people to do right by historically marginalized people. And by historically marginalized, I mean Black and Brown queer, Black and Brown trans, Black and Brown disabled, Black and Brown men, Black and Brown women, Black and Brown non-binary, Black and Brown first generation, Black and Brown people, right? The country is going to continue to get blacker and browner. And it's important that our voices continue to be heard. I still believe that the strongest weapon and the biggest gift I have is my voice. And Living Corporate is a megaphone and an amplifier for all things Black and Brown at work. So I'm happy that you're listening. Welcome to the network. We outside, baby. Let's go. Now look, the next thing you're going to hear, we're going to have, you know what I'm saying, our interview. I'm excited for you to check out this interview. Don't go nowhere. I'm going to see you in a minute. Peace. Libra Clemens, welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
I'm good.
Let's get right to it. I've been trying to have you on for like mad years. I'm trying to figure out what happened, Libra. Like, what is it? Was there some beef that had to be cleared in the back end? Like, what happened?
No. First of all, you're fantastic. I see what you're doing, and I'm super impressed. I always make time. It may not be exactly when you want it, but I'm right on time.
I respect it. I respect it, Libra. So look. No, I'm super thankful and excited about this conversation. I've been like, I put it on my calendar, and I took one of my daughter's red crayons, and I wrote a big circle on a date. I was like, we're going to meet. Listen, there's so many things for us to talk about. I want to start with the fact that you are one of the few. So okay, let's have the real conversation. So we got DEI as the space. We have DEI as the space, and so like I think that, like, there's different personas, and look, I like personas because I come from transformation and change management. You have to, and then also like go to market strategy. You have to make personas. It's just a really good way to like just understand whatever landscape you're talking about. So in my mind, like there's personas of like different DEI leaders. So first off, there's like this like young, inexperienced DEI leader who like is very passionate. They don't actually know what they're doing, but like they're here and they're going to give it their all and they're going to figure it out. And they kind of just follow the mainstream, whatever. Then like there's like the older persona of, look, I was in HR for a really long time. Low key, I'm probably about to retire. This is going to kind of be my semi-retirement job as I go off and I do what I got to do. Right. So there's another persona. There's another persona of, yo, like, I'm actually like a grassroots activist. I tricked these people into hiring me. They're not really ready for me. And right. I'm probably gonna be out of here in like 6 months. But while I'm here, I'm shaking stuff up.
Right.
And
right.
And then there's this persona of like,
oh my gosh, you are nailing it. You
am
are
I wrong? Nailing it. I appreciate so you. Right. No, I appreciate you. So then, okay. So I'm gonna do two more. Mm-hmm. Then there's like this other persona of like, look, I really don't really do DEI. I really just want to get in the mm-hmm. C-suite. This happens to be the only way I can get in. I'm gonna keep it cool. I'm gonna follow and play along. Mm-hmm. But I'm really kind of just here. So, and I'm probably trying to pivot into something else. This is the only way I can get my foot in the door. But I'm here. Don't expect me to really do nothing. I'm chilling. That's it.
Yeah, and I identify within the marginalized group. You know what I mean?
And I identify in the marginalized group.
Right.
And
right.
And as you say that, then of course there's the, you know, look, I'm white, but I'm white, so I'm a DEI officer. That's a very large persona. Right. But you though, right? You sit in this space where I feel like you straddle like this these spaces where it's like, on the surface, it's people who fall into a persona can easily associate themselves or think that you're one of the, hey, I'm here to look good. We're gonna go to this gala. I'm gonna make sure that I'm seen. I want to make sure I'm quoted.
I'm gonna stand on, be a panel.
I'm gonna be on panels. Yeah. I really think immediately. I think that's where people would place you, mm-hmm. right? But what was interesting though, when you were at Twilio, we're gonna talk about that. When you were at Twilio, mm-hmm. and actually shout out to Danny. Danny, you got to get back at me. I know you got a lot of stuff going on. Holla at your boy. But anyway, Danny pointed me to the work you were doing around like mm-hmm. real anti-racism, and it was interesting to me because I was like, and I literally said, looking at her profile, I would not have pegged her to. Mm. To do that,
right.
And when I say that, I mean, frankly, I like create a space where you might be shortening your runway. Because looking at the rest of your profile, I was like, oh well, she could just do what most of these people be doing, and probably just kind of max it out, and then go off and take some other big job at some other big huge mm-hmm. brand, and just kind of mm-hmm. be a nice face. I'm curious, what led you to really take such a prominent stance and position with the anti-racism work and try to like incorporate it and institutionalize anti-racism at a tech company, considering that, again, from where I'm sitting, you had other options and ways to really, frankly, be like a kept corporate person. Because that's what a lot of these people want to be. They really just want to be kept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why did you do that?
I mean, first of all, let me match you to where you started, because I think that all the prototypes you laid out are so real. And I don't pass judgment on anyone that falls into that, but those are the camps typically is what you've seen. And what I have seen from my early years in the early 2000s, like 2003, starting as early as that, doing diversity work, I have seen it evolve where we do have those personas and we do have those stereotypes, or not stereotypes, but really the prototypes. So I appreciate you calling those out, because I think it's also a testament to the industry that people are actually able to fall into those camps. Second of all, I'm kind of like, I'm slightly offended, but humored that I would be the person that would be on a stage, because I cannot stand people like that. I cannot stand it, but it's just like, DEI is so much more than that. But I don't think it's the person that does it. It's the company that expects it. So I don't push back on that's why I say I don't pass judgment, because some people just have to make ends meet. Some people try to break in any way that they can. And in order to do that and to have any kind of longevity or credibility, you got to do what the companies want. And 99.9% of the companies want that. They want you to go to galas. They want you to electric slide at events. They want you to be the face. They want you to do panels. They want all of that. Now, does not mean that you're not doing other work underneath, but you know, that is part, or this is, was, can be part of the job. So, and I think in my mind, I try to balance that as much as I can. So getting to Twilio and anti-racism, I did not deem nor promote Twilio, or not promote, encourage Twilio to become an anti-racist organization. I want to make sure that there's timing, that people understand the timeline. Mm. One thing I would say, Twilio posted one of the first chief diversity officer roles, and I say one of because there was another one, and I say chief because it was actually C-suite reporting to the CEO and actually part of the executive team, January 2020. I want everybody to understand that date. January 2020, that there was a role for a chief diversity officer to report to Jeff, the CEO, and be part of the executive team. January. We all know what happened in March 2020. We also know what happened in May. Okay. So I just want there to be some understanding about kind of the trajectory. I'm not saying that there wasn't there's tons of backstories, and the person that had the job before did an amazing job to push them. And I give her 100% of the credit for actually pushing them to actually create that role. I'm telling a story, Zach. So it will get, I will eventually answer your question because that's what DEI people do. Answer the question with most stories. So March happened, of course, May happened, and then June, every company in America, not every, lots of companies decided what they were going to do and how they were going to respond to George Floyd in May. Twilio at the time said, we're going to become an anti-racist organization. Libra Clemens joined Twilio in August 2020. So understanding the timing, That was not me. I joined, it was a draw, but I was not the one that said, hey, you all should become an anti-racist organization. So it came from the executive team. So to get to answer your question, I say this all the time, Twilio did not know what anti-racism meant. They just thought that it would be, or they had a very, very basic understanding of anti-racism, as most people did at that time. And I think they were like, oh, that's just a good way for us to go. Once we started to uncover and read Ibram Kendi's book to fully understand what it means to be an anti-racist, that's when the conversation started to have. We started to have the real conversations about what this means for the company. So let me answer a couple of your questions. One, I think I've had so many DEI roles. I'm also not a person that's all about the establishment. I feel very, of course this dog is going crazy. I apologize. I am very, very privileged. I'm very, very, I feel very privileged that I feel confident in who I am and what I'm about, that I don't have much to prove except for knowing what my purpose is in a role and in a job. And that comes from years and years of being in the DEI space, almost 20 years. That comes from being a seasoned executive. This isn't my first job. This isn't my first rodeo. But also just comes with just the myriad of experiences that I've had where I recognize that I'm not a mold fitter. And I'm going to do what I can legally within realms to push the envelope to disrupt a system that no longer works for us. And that's my superpower. So I hope that gives you some context into how and why. And then the place was to do it at a place like Twilio that committed, that had the role, the position, and the power to actually drive it with the mindset that it wasn't a by any means necessary. It was, I have nothing to lose. So this is going to work or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, we'll move on. But at the very least, I know that I will touch the hearts and minds of very many, many people through this transformation that will go off in a network effect and start to evolve and change the industry.
So look, I do appreciate the contextualization and the timeline that you're speaking to. The reason why I still say some of this I knew. So, right, like I recognize mm-hmm. that it wasn't maybe your whole entire crafting, but the fact of the matter is, like, I've seen people fold, right? Hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And then, like, we look into it, it starts getting a little bit uncomfortable. Oh, what I can say is it's a little bit more complex. Hey, it's a little bit more nuanced. Frankly, this might be beyond my intellectual bailiwick. So we're going to not do that. We're going to do something different. The fact of the matter is like, when I look at your, when I looked at the Twilio's the report, right? That you were prominently featured on and were and authored and were like speaking to and promoting, it was like, dang, like this person's really going full tilt with this. I'm curious, like, did you have people, other leaders, behind the scenes, other DEI leaders, officers, etc., like hit you up, kind of like, hey, what are you doing? Or hey, like, were they nervous for you? Like, I'm curious, like, what was that like?
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. And again, I goes back to the point where I had nothing to lose. I've been in the game for so long. I know my worth. I know what I know about DEI. You either take me or leave me. So you have to go in there. It takes a certain type of person to go in and be like, fine, if this is how you're going to respond, but I'm going to do my job. And this is what we're committed to. The other thing, and I'm going to get back to the other chief diversity officers, the role had to be right. And the company had to be the right. And the timing, it's all about the timing. Had George Floyd not happened, had the role not been listed before George Floyd, see what I mean? It was, and if the role did not report to the CEO, if the role had not been part of the executive team at a time where the company was flourishing, this would have been a little different. So I think that they're all the stars were aligned, Zach, to be honest. And I think that's also helpful. I had people who were my closest friends be like, you're brave. It's kind of like when I remember the same sentiment when I actually grew out my relaxer. I had my girls kind of like, girl, you brave. Oh my God. Why are you doing this? Oh no. What does that mean? But it was like, I had one of those, you are so brave. Oh my God. I can't believe it. And it wasn't, I don't know that I had people that were like, no way, you should not. But it was more of, oh my, I cannot believe. I'm in awe. I'm going to sit behind you. I'm here for you, but I'm going to watch you do it because I will not and could not be the first person to put myself out there. So it took a lot of, again, experience, confidence, and just this, you know, this understanding that if this doesn't work, I would have disrupted something, but I know I can find something else.
So, you know, so there's something to be said also, though, like about, I don't know, like there's people so I get frustrated. I mean, honestly, like Living Corporate was born out of frustration of like the lack of frank and honest conversations within for marginalized experiences and perspectives and work. And so there's part of me, Libra, where I'm like, I get annoyed. Right. So like, I'm like, so like just now when you just said, man, you're so brave and I'm a stand behind you, but I'm rooting you on, but I can't do that. It's kind of like some of this, now what I'm about to say, I fully own some of it, Libra, might be because I'm youngish. Okay. But I look at people, they be like in their 40s and 50s scared still. And I'm just like, what are you afraid of? Like, you're going to die one day. Like you, like, what is it? Yeah. What do you think is going to actually happen? So like, let's say you go out there, you say, hey, I believe in anti-racism, or I believe systems and structure need to be reimagined, transformed, blah, 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 blah. Like, do you think that somebody's going to pick up a phone call and you're never going to work again? You're going to be homeless and shaking a can on the street?
Yes, yes. Well, no. People do go through extremes. So everybody assumes that that's just this, the scarcity model, that you do one thing and all of a sudden you're going to be homeless with a needle in your arm. I don't know where people get that from, but they think that one mistake will end them up on the streets of San Francisco. And I'm pretty sure all those people that live in San Francisco did not just make that one mistake and that's why they're on there. There's a myriad of other things that happen. Right. But when you've been taught, especially when you've, and I've learned this with people, like part of DEI and being a HR person, which are pretty much the same thing, is understand how people are wired and where they came from. There are people, this is their first entree into corporate America. This is their first time making X amount of money. They are the breadwinners. They are the, you know, they are the sole, you know, provider for their family and other extended families. Any mistake could end you not with a needle in your arm, but back to where you were. And so you have to understand people, and especially marginalized communities. We come in all shapes and sizes and experiences and backgrounds. And I think we're in now a different generation where many of us are not the first, some are, but you have to understand and meet people where they are in their comfort level. So doesn't mean that they don't care, but there are people that are not willing to disrupt their monthly check. And the thing is, I think what's so heartening, I'm saying this out loud, I'm probably never said this. I'm saying this out loud, although I've thought it. I've been very privileged, not that I am rich, not that my parents have all this money, but I've been in a pretty good situation where I feel like I have faith and a bit of a faith safety net that I can be like, fine. Like, I'm not working now. I'm fine. I know me. Libra will always land, and I always bounce back higher. So, but not everybody has that A experience, B that faith, or C just any kind of safety net. They could be one, two paychecks away from having to move in with parents, having to disrupt their lives, and also we don't have kids. So it's just different decisions that people make, and I don't begrudge them, nor do I make comments or make statements about that. I think that there's a role that everyone can play because you do need the people that are going to maintain the basics at Campbell's Soup. I'm just making up the company. I'm not saying that someone at Campbell's Soup is great, isn't doing DEI. You need those people that do basics because some of those basics keep people going. I do have problems with DEI folks and team members who are joining a team for all the wrong reasons, and it disrupts the energy and the effectiveness of a team. And I've experienced that on so many levels that I have more of a problem with than people that are like, yeah, I can't get down with this
Well,
because
tell me
everybody
more.
has a reason for that. Well, I just think that, I've worked in so many teams, I've worked with so many people, I have worked with so many amazing people who recognize their need and want to be part of a DEI system. And then there are those people that do it for just they're to fill a certain gap or a need that cannot necessarily be met on a DEI team or a corporate team. So I do think there are people in the world, in the workplace, that come to work and bring their issues to work. And I think they join a DEI team or an HR team or any team to fulfill a need, and that's somewhat okay. But where I think we've gone wrong, this is not a DEI thing, it's a corporate or workplace thing, is the workplace is not a therapy session. It is not your home life. It is not an extension of your dorm life. And so what I think has been a huge disservice to the culture of a workplace are these anti-corporate, i.e. tech and other companies, which I love and am a product of and I support, but that we've become an extended home or extended therapy or extended life for people, and they come to work and act out all their issues and challenges in the workplace. And that is destroying the culture. It's destroying the culture of a company, which ultimately can and will destroy a company. And so that's what I mean. And I think oftentimes it's hard when marginalized people come and it's hard for them. So we're already having challenging discussions for people from marginalized communities who have to work day to day in a majority situation. And I say majority in a way to denote those that are in power, not distribution or representation. But I do find that at times people come and it's very disruptive to the work. And I have problems with that. Not that, because we all have issues. I haven't been the best manager all the time, but I know when I do the right thing. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I
I do.
try to do the right thing for people. And I think people often come to work and on a DEI team or HR team to kind of relive some of their unresolved issues and don't do the right things. And that's where I have more of a problem with that than people that are like, yo, girl, I can't help you on this. Like, because that's my path. That's my ministry. Other people's ministry might be something else.
You know, it's so interesting. I think what's, so we're in this the stage of our economy, like hyper late stage capitalist society, right? Like mm-hmm. where like we're seeing wages stagnate or frankly kind of crawl, even like at like, you know, like some of the higher levels, right? Like I talk to black folks all the time, specifically, and mm-hmm. brown folks more broadly mm-hmm. about these roles. You know, sometimes they're making like 140, 160, somebody making like two something. But, you know, mm-hmm. the range has kind of been what it's been from what I have, from people I've talked to, like the past like 7-8 years. And so, mm-hmm. like, so even though like wages have been fairly stagnant, expectations of production continue to increase. And so part of me, I believe, Libra, is this whole idea of like bringing your whole self to work and there really being mm-hmm. no balance or boundary, and really there being more of this like blend almost where it's like, well, just be, just kind of like exist and just always be working all the time, is really a consequence of like where we are economically. Like, and I'm not an economist, I'm just saying, like, I think there's mm-hmm. I do think that there's this push to really have a work-life blend so that you can continue to make, produce for these organizations at a rate and a clip that you just weren't doing that in like the 90s. So I've been told. So like,
right.
So like, so I agree with you that it's like, okay, there should be clear boundaries and it's destroying, mm-hmm. it's really harming company culture. At the same time, the underlying culture and pressure of production, I believe, creates, it's like they seem, what's the word? They seem at odds, right? Like if you really yeah. want true work-life balance and boundary, then that means you're going to have less production, which means, so like, are you willing to have less production, big corporation? Or do you really want people working all the time and having unhealthy balances, which means that they're probably going to have less time and capacity to actually handle like unresolved trauma and things that are happening in their personal lives because all they do is work right. all the time.
Am I being unfair? And listen, I think you are, I think you're spot on. I think you're spot on. And I agree to you to some extent. So yes, there are some industries now in the 90s. Now you have to understand, now I want to disagree on the piece that there, people worked hard in the 90s and the early 2000s, harder. There was no iPhone or iPad or anything. There was no technology. That's a good point. So you actually had to go into the office and leave the office. But there was respect, and they had less resources, not even resources. They weren't offering free coaching and free massages and lunches. You got a ride home and you got a bonus. And I'm talking about extreme banking. And if you were like on the trading floor, you right. understood the rules when you walked in the door, but you never cursed out your boss. You never started crying because we removed the book allowance from your company. Like, it was just like, that's what you knew you were doing in the 90s. And, you know, and yes, I'm not saying the 90s was great because it wasn't great for women that decided they wanted to, you know, they wanted to have children. There was no plan to re-enter them back into the workplace. So we've come a long way, but we've gone backwards in terms of respect and expectations. So I, to some extent, I agree with you in that people are working hard. I don't necessarily, yes, and some of these salaries have been, they've been consistent, but let me tell you, some of these tech companies and higher paying companies, people make a lot of money. They yeah. make a lot of money. They make yeah. a lot of money at a young age. And so nowadays companies have unlimited PTO. I remember working in banking. You got 2 weeks off. That was your vacation, not unlimited. You couldn't go to like work from Italy for the month of August. That was, none of that was happening. So I'm yeah. not saying that just because that new companies these days, and once 2 to 3 companies start that, everyone's matching. So I'm not saying companies these days don't have high expectations. I'm not saying that companies aren't expecting outputs, but what I am saying is there's a lot more accommodation these days. And I do believe that there's a lot more accommodations for mental health. I mean, I am on a Slack channel today about what is happening in the Gaza Strip with other heads of DEI and the statements and this, that, and the other. And I mean, whatever your political views are, The fact is, nobody at any company is happy with the statement that the company put out.
Oh, I
in
believe
the
that.
90s, I'm telling, but they blew up an entire building, and I lived in New York. There was no statement. Like, there was like, it's just like, so the levels of expectations are different. And as leaders, we own that. We have created that expectation, but I feel like we've got to figure out how to manage it from a culture perspective. So in this push to get more DEI, we've made it easier for everybody else, which is wonderful. And I do think that there needs to be a better work environment. 100%. I am a true fan of remote work when it makes sense. I am a true fan of offering any type of support, mental health support for any type of fertility, anything like that. I am a huge fan of that. I am a huge fan of unlimited PTO. I am not a fan of tantrums in the office, cursing out your boss, and being completely disrespectful to people who manage you.
So
that, and somehow those have all come together.
So, and see, that's where we have to have, you have to have come back and see, I ain't thinking about nothing like that. I've never seen that before. So that sounds crazy to me. Mm-hmm. You talk about people cussing out their bosses. I mean, now I will say this though. Libra, one time I paid off my first house and I had no debt nowhere in my life. I did cuss with my boss. I did not cuss them out, but I let them know.
Right.
Hey, yo, I ain't really got to be here, you know, so but
right,
larger
exactly.
scale,
I got it. Yeah.
But larger scale, though, 100% receive. Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. You know, it's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about like the DEI. Mm-hmm. Now, like, you know, you and I are having this conversation in Q4 of 2023. So here's my thing. I clocked this back in like 2021. That DEI about to be gone. So like by 2025, 2025, it ain't gonna be no more DEI. It's gonna be people strategy, and there'll be like employee experience with like with like, you know, double and triple clicks for you know, whatever you got going on. I'm curious, like, you know, you just talked about the Slack channel with all these DEI leaders. I'd love to be a fly on that wall, to be honest, because
everybody does. I'm like, I'm gonna start charging people who want to just pop
charge.
Into our Slack
you gotta,
channel.
You gotta charge. Give
it's
them
a
give
safe
them like a day
space.
Pass.
Right.
Yeah, give them a day pass. And yeah, real talk though. And so like my thing is, I'm curious as you talk to your network and you know, of specifically DEI, IDE, JEDI, IND, et cetera, et cetera.
Awesome. Yeah.
All What is y'all's perspectives on like just like on this space between now and like the installation of the next president?
So, couple things. One is you started the podcast talking about the different types of folks that are in DEI. Well, those different types of folks are all in the Slack channel, so their idea of it might be different. I'm in the mine. I've also been in the space for a long time. So, for example, you know, I heard when Barack Obama became president, there was going to be no more need for DEI. So companies were quickly like, we're getting rid of it. And then it started up again. You know, the same thing after the crash, the same time around the crash of the market, after September 11th. Oh, we all need to be in harmony. We're a global country, like, or global world. We don't need DEI. It's the ebbs and flows. You know, the reality is that you're going to need some form of it. I don't care what you call it. You're going to need some form of activism and promoting of equitable experiences for all people. No matter what. Because the reality is, if you look at the top, you know, I was talking to someone earlier and they were like, yeah, we're really so, so, so committed to diversity. And I was like, really? They were like, yeah, representation is key. You know, the thing. I was like, okay, I went on their board. I went on the website and I saw their board and I was like, I'm really confused. Again, this is just visible. So maybe I made some assumptions, but what I can assume is that is not diversity. And if you really care, you start at the board, you start at the top. So I don't see a world where we're not going to have somebody calling that out and making those decisions and thinking about how to shift systems and processes to be more equitable that are in support of marginalized communities but it could be called something else. So for example, you had a great conversation with someone who I absolutely adore and think he is absolutely fantastic is Danny. Danny Guillory was riding the DEI wave for as long as I was, and now he's a chief people officer. What you could potentially see, and I've seen this before, are DEI people who've been in this space for a long time, who have at that C-suite level, transition into chief people officer roles and just doing the same thing using a different lens and doing it through the systems and processes on the people end from a people strategy perspective. And I think that's where I could potentially see it, but I don't know that this movement is going to disappear. We just probably call it something else, or you figure out how to do it in different ways, but it's still happening. It will continue. It has to, because the world needs it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's interesting, right? So, you know, Living Corporate, we made this decision to, we being my family, but also the team, for me to jump and focus on Living Corporate full time this past July, this summer. And just even in light of this landscape, right? And part of the calculus was, irrespective of like what the big political talking heads are saying, and irrespective even of what like maybe certain like political groups or like lobbyists or even like judicial groups are trying to force and create or whatever, is talent strategy will always be important. Brand and trust equity will always be important. And frankly, these Gen Zers aren't going nowhere. So there's going to always be some level of expectation. I mean, honestly, kind of going back to what you said about, look, yes, a lot of these young people out here cussing out their bosses and going on Twitter, airing them out on TikTok and stuff like that. But with that, they're also drastically pushing like workforce expectations and labor expectations in a certain way. Now, is all of that push good or like, or productive or meaningful? Not all of it is, but like, that's okay. Like, even if you have, like, when you think about change, like, even you think about like the Civil Rights Movement, the Civil Rights Act, I believe that the law initially was called the Black Rights Act, and it had way more things and demands in that bill, and then it scaled back. So like, that's just how change happens. Like, if there's pushes that feel extreme, and then you scale it back, but with that, you're still taking steps forward. So like, I think my next question to you is, you know, what we're looking at right now, we're seeing walkouts happening all over the place. We're looking at people, especially Libra, stuff just becomes more and more expensive. I mean, shoot, I want to say I tried to buy some bologna last week, and it was like $3. I said, $3 for some bologna? And so we're seeing the workforce continually grown at, and like call out like just the ridiculous inequity of these spaces. And we're seeing,
I mean, how about California taxes? I mean,
see, let's start, I can't relate to y'all. I have no idea. I'm like, straight up, it's so funny you say that, because I talk to people and I know people who making money out there, right? So it's like, I've met people out there who are chief diversity officers making like, I don't know, like $300,000-$500,000base, right? But I literally don't even know how to qualify, like how to even qualify if that's a lot of money or not, because y'all's taxes are so crazy and houses are so expensive. So it's like, well, is that a lot of money? In Texas, that would be crazy. Like, you'd be a king out here. But, but in California, I'm just like, what is that?
It's hard. And that's what I think people have to understand. This is why this equity work is so important. So I lived in California. I just relocated to Florida last year. My parents live here, you know, we're East Coast people, but I relocated to California for 5 years and I loved it. I loved California, well, where I was, for different reasons. But those taxes, no matter, you know, and yes, you might be in it. And listen, it's a very privileged conversation to have about my compensation, which was great. And I was able to do what I needed to do. But the taxes are significant. And so when you think about just this DEI work and talking about ERGs and being on a stage, but you haven't addressed the inequities to which a lot of these companies are based in California, marginalized Word. People probably cannot afford to live there if they have all the things that we typically come with, parents, debt, this, that, and the other, didn't grow up having people pay for everything so they could just take their salary and move forward. Some of them are breadwinners, like we talked about before. So mm-hmm. how do you make ends meet in California? And then you've got companies mandating people to come back to the office and to live and breathe and pay taxes in a state that has not historically been great to them. I mean, I'm not saying that every state is good, but I'm just saying, like, those are the types of things that you need the Gen Zers that are activists. You need that, and you need whatever you want to call DEI to continue to get founders and CEOs and others to really reconsider some of those decisions when it comes to how it impacts marginalized people. So it was hard. And again, I'm very privileged. So I'm speaking, I'm called my privilege all day in terms of my salary and we don't have children. So I understand that. So it was okay, but it was much better, you know, leaving the state as well. So there's just those types of, when I think about anti-racism, it goes beyond just reading Ibram Kendi's book and writing and incorporating anti-racism into things that we say. It becomes a decision-making mechanism to ensure that everybody has the similar experiences as much as they can and opportunities to succeed financially as others. And when you make a decision for everybody to move to California, and now I'm just saying, not every decision is that haphazard, and there are people that need to be in the office, and I get that. I'm not begrudging that. I think it's a great decision. But when it's driven by this need for control versus understanding culture and experience, mm-hmm. that is the opposite of anti-racist, which Ibram Kendi says, it's just racist. And it's racist. Like, and not in a negative racist way. So I don't want anybody to be like, oh, she called people racist, send her a letter. No, that's not what I'm saying. But in the formal sense of description or the definition of racist, it's not that you've made a decision that only benefits a small percentage of people. And those are the people that are in power.
So you said something there. I'm gonna make a statement, and then I'm gonna follow up with my last real question, I think, here for this mm-hmm. conversation, because I still want us to connect after this call. My challenge with like the concept or notion of first of all, of course, I agree with the idea of anti-racism. Mm-hmm. Ibram Kendi is not the first person to talk about anti-racism. I mean, shoot, he's standing on the shoulders of all these Black women. Audre Lorde.
Oh, that's no doubt. Him,
yeah. Right. So like, we know that, you know that, but I'm saying sometimes we have mm-hmm. some aspirational allies who listen and they don't know that. So I'm just letting mm-hmm. y'all know mm-hmm. that this conceptually has been around for a while. My challenge when it comes to like incorporating or like really DEI as a equity as a space or DEI as a space, but certainly anti-racism as a concept in a corporate context is so much of being anti-racist, like not being not racist, but being mm-hmm. anti-racist has to do with, it's the mobilization of levers for justice, righting past yep. wrongs and harms. That part right there, corporations, that's like the equivalent of reparation, like corporate reparations, right? So like, I'll give you an example. I worked at a very large consulting firm years ago. And I was told, Zach, you're too focused on DEI. And because you're so focused on DEI, you might not have a place at this company, at this firm. And I said, okay, that's crazy. You sound nuts. I went on mental health leave. Then I went on paternity leave. Just so happened, George Floyd was murdered. Mm-hmm. So I come back. Now, before I went on leave, all of my performance stuff was high. All of my rankings were high. Like, everything was good.
Yeah.
I left right before they did career roundtables and they determine your next salary band.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. made a decision to keep me at my last salary band. Now, mm-hmm. at the time, it was like the difference of like 130 something and 140 something. So Was it a groundbreaking amount of money? No, it wasn't. However, every dollar count, whatever. So when I went back to HR and I said, hey, why did y'all make this decision? They came back to me and said, it was a mistake. I said, cool. So when are y'all going to put me in the right salary band? And when are y'all going to give me my back pay for all these months of pay that should have been at the previous salary band? They were like, whoa. You would have thought I asked for back pay for my salary band and asked to be moved to a salary band, Libra. They were like, well, they had no idea how to. And so my issue is that I don't think organizations are willing to, or really have, like, one, have the intellectual capacity, the emotional capacity, or the strategic capacity to right wrongs committed against employees in a way that is scalable and sustainable, and that squares with this scarcity mindset, and capitalist, hyper-capitalist and patriarchal context that they've been raised to understand is right. Now, look, I'm not even asking you to say nothing. Okay, I'm saying all that to ask you this question: what happened at Twilio? So you were there.
Oh my god, that's not what I was actually going to talk about. So let me just address a couple things. One is, I agree with you. There's all kind. I went to Spelman, so I know the background and the background. My parents are like very active, like in civil rights. Like, yes, I get it. The concept of anti-racism isn't new. We just coined a term and finally had people focused on it. So yes. I would say, and Ibram Kendi, the timing was right. He wrote the book in 2019. Haha. He was, you know, things just happened for him. I also believe that anti-racism to me isn't necessary. Could it be righting the wrongs? It could be, but corporations aren't going to do that. They're not going to right wrongs. They're going to try to go forward with their decisions. What makes this work hard is what I said earlier. Most people in power, and this is what I have true issues with, a lot of folks, and I don't know how to describe that, but anyway, most people are willing to donate money, are willing to say the right words, are willing to understand basic things and hair and pronouns and learn different languages to connect with marginalized folks. Mm-hmm. But what really most people are not willing to do is change their behavior to make different decisions so that they can actually go without, so others can actually get the same.
That's
the difference. And that right there is the problem. And so I think I've answered the question that you asked, but I feel, and that to me is a hard thing to ask people to do, but I also think it's part of evolving into being a good leader and a true leader. The other thing I would say that Ibram Kendi says, that I think a lot of us struggled with, is you cannot serve God and money. He says you cannot be anti-racist and be a capitalist. And so corporations and corporate America has been built off of racist policies and racist values. So trying to build an anti-racist organization is kind of like an oxymoron. And so that's where I think people struggle with. It's because in order for a founder or a company or any CEO to have gotten where they've gotten to, knowing that 98% of them are white, and I don't know what the other percentage is, I'm sure it's probably 85% of them are males, you've done this through whatever the privilege you've had. I'm not saying that just because you're white or male or woman that you didn't have problems and you didn't grow up with much, but when you are deemed as powerful based off of your race and your gender combination, it leads you to have better opportunities. Not saying everybody does. And so those powers and the power that you have now, the decisions that were made in order to that made you successful, why would you go back and try to shift how decisions are being made? Because in the end, what you don't want is to go without. And that's unfortunately why we're in this very, very highly politicized environment right now, because people are feeling that. It's not called wokeness. I don't care what it is. It's, oh my God, you want me now to give up riding in first class so that all of us could work ride first class? Being in first class, part of the appeal is that I am in first class and you're in coach. You know what I mean? So
real talk.
That's
yes.
the thing. And so I think that I hope that that is also a very diplomatic way of answering the question. I think things happen. I think there's a timing issue where a company, especially companies, vow to make these commitments in 2020. And it was amazing knowing that there wasn't going to have, you know, that in 2 to 3 years, that right. wasn't going to be the case. To answer part of your question, the other part of the question is I have nothing to lose. So either take it or not. Like, I'm not backing off. I'm either in or not, and I'm okay. You don't have to worry about me. You know, like, I do what I do. And so either we're in or we're out. That's another part of the question. I think that people get afraid. I think when your money is being, not everybody, the market is really tough. And I think that when your bottom line is being scrutinized, any added, any added initiative that will further scrutinize the bottom line also will create more problems. So I hope that's starting to answer your question. So there's a combination of things. Yeah,
it does. Yeah. You know, so the one thing I like, one of the several things I like about you, Libra, is, so I've had somebody, older friend of my life say, Zach, you're not confrontational, but you kind of have this, like, you ain't gonna beat my ass type energy. And right. I was like, and I said, I mean, yeah, I guess. But you're one of the mm-hmm. few people I met who really matched that. Like, you really ain't really tripping. And so, like, it's encouraging and it is affirming to meet somebody who's, like, very clear in who they are and what they're about and confident enough to, like, live and walk in their purpose without having trying to apologize for it. So shout out to you for that. And with that, I have my real last question. With all that being said, and with your very diplomatic answer, thank you for answering my question, is mm-hmm. What would you say to the DEI leader, head of whatever at insert organization here, who hailed your work, the anti-racist report mm-hmm. and the work you were doing at Twilio, and now see you no longer at Twilio and go, see, this is why I need to not do that and cater to right. the feelings of the power majority?
Yeah, that's about 95% of the people like, well, girl, if you can't do it, you know. And listen, there's always the first. There's always somebody. I mean, DEI was not born out of a bunch of people that came together and was like, let's all do this together. It's going to be really challenging. There was one person that started this movement 40, 50 years ago that kept getting slapped down. And other people were picking up the pieces to create a movement. That's what a movement is. And so there are people that have a growth mindset and folks that don't, and that have a scarcity mindset. The folks that have a growth mindset that are like, I'm good. And they adhere to a higher being and understand faith and know that they are chosen and walking into their purpose. Those are the ones that will continue, whatever it is, because I came after that. And there are people who will ultimately get on the boat, but I don't, and that's okay. Like, there are people that are like, I can't do that. And again, we talked about that earlier. They cannot afford to miss a check. They cannot afford that. Nor can their emotion, where they are emotionally, they can't afford that. I'm going to say that also this. If Twilio had come to me 8 years ago, I would be one of those people. So you just don't know. I mean, I'm just where I am. All these things line up for a reason. And so we're seeing that. There are a lot of people that say that to me. They're like, that's why we don't do this. And that's why. And those people are fantastic leaders who do what they do because they keep the boat afloat. But you gotta have folks that are going to take that boat to that next wave. And it's only a few of us. And you know it when you are it, and just step up and do it. And I just don't believe it's for everybody, to be quite honest. I don't.
Libra, look. So, look, listen, you're a friend of the show. I'm already speaking. You're going to come back before the end of Q2 next year. But just know you're welcome to come back anytime. I'm excited about what you got going on. We're here to support. And man, I just love, I love matching energy. I love when you meet folks, it's like, you know, you can just tell it's like, it's energy syncopation. It's energy synergy. I love it. I love it. So y'all, before, look, it's been Libra Clemens, executive leader, coach, speaker, consultant.
Can I say this really quickly though? Can I say this really quickly though? Yeah. I don't want people to think that I appreciate all the accolades. This is self work. Like, I have been working on self. Like, the end of every relationship in the workplace or personal is hard for me. It is hard for me. And while I may have I'll be fine, it was hard. And I just want people to understand that I've also made mistakes and I've also done things that weren't so great. So I just want people to know that there's a very human approach to this. And my feelings got hurt. I was upset. I felt betrayed. I felt this. I may have betrayed, but I just want people to understand that this is also hard work and you have to continue to work on self in the midst of it. Otherwise, you won't be able to steer to that next wave. So I think that's super important. I don't want people to be like, oh my God, she's this, she's great, she's that. Oh, the stuff I've been through, I got war wounds all up and through.
And I receive that. I receive that. And I'm gonna give you the last word. I still want to give you your flowers because plenty of people go through traumas. Plenty of people go through heartbreak and disappointments and betrayals. We all don't do the self-work to process and then leverage that to grow and mature, right? So received, Libra, look, we can keep on going. I'm going to respect your time. We're going to get up out of here. we'll talk to you soon, okay? And we're back. Yo, thank you so much for rocking with us at Living Corporate. So excited. Make sure that you check out the links in the show notes to learn more about Living Corporate. If ain't nobody else tell you today, I'm going to tell you right now, I love you. You matter. Take care of yourself. Later.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.